All right, here we go, 6:14 on this Wednesday morning, January 14th. Almost done with the first month of 2026 already. Slight chance for showers. Whatever is left will be gone by around 8 o'clock. Highs of 64 today. Then I heard Peyton Malone earlier maybe say, get out the big heavy coat, which I like. Not because I'm necessarily a fan of the cold weather, but by golly, I bought a big heavy coat and I want to use it. At least occasionally. 51 for a high tomorrow. Plenty of wind as well. Highs of 66 Friday. Then looking at the weekend, nice. Highs in the 50s and plenty of sunshine. So get out and enjoy that. Ted Russ, did I tell you right now it's about 49 degrees? Well, if not, I'll just tell you that right now. It's about 49 degrees. Ted Rossman joins us now, our friend. He is a financial Bankrate senior industry analyst. Good morning, Ted. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. Thank you.
Let's talk about what President Trump is talking about with credit card interest rates.
Yes, he's talking about a one-year 10% cap, which would be a pretty dramatic reduction. Right now, the average credit card charges around 20%. Many people are actually paying 25%, 30%, sometimes even more. The highest credit card rates I see are around 36%. This is a big deal because millions of Americans have credit card debt. Roughly half of cardholders carry debt from month to month. Six out of every 10 with debt have had it at least a year. So it's a big pain point for people. I just worry that the 10% cap is so low that banks would react very negatively. They say they would cut back on access to credit, and that may actually have huge unintended consequences that could actually hurt a lot of the people who this is intended to protect.
So what would that look like, banks reacting and cutting back on credit?
The Electronic Payments Coalition and the Missouri Bankers Association did a study, and they estimated that about 90% of credit card holders could actually lose access to credit if a 10% cap were enacted. And that's really because of the risk assessment. Credit card debt is unsecured. It's not backed by a home or car or any other underlying asset. So banks' big worry is that people are not going to pay them back. And they say that 10% is just not a workable cap for them. They need to charge more than that to account for delinquencies and defaults and other overhead. So they say the reaction would be to just pull back on lending. And a lot of people just wouldn't be able to use credit cards anymore. Now, that seems like kind of an extreme reaction, but it just shows how far apart the two sides are on this issue. A 10% cap would be really, really low, considering that the current average is about double that. It's very hard to find a credit card rate in the single digits. There are 0% balance transfer promotions, of course. Those last up to a couple of years. But on an ongoing basis, I can think of very few credit cards below 10%. A handful of credit unions offer those to people with really good credit. But a lot of mainstream cards are more like 20 to 25%.
Did he say what the stated goal of this would be to lower it for 1 year to 10%?
It's really an affordability issue. It's part of this whole midterm campaign to make things more affordable, kind of like other proposals that we've seen recently about housing and other aspects of our finances. The 1 year part is interesting. Maybe that's an acknowledgement that one realizes this can't last forever, maybe it's somehow to make it more palatable to regulators or the courts. My understanding is that this is not something that can be done by executive order, that it would require congressional approval. Now, interestingly, there are a bipartisan group of senators who would love to see this happen, including some like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, who rarely agree with the president on policy proposals. You also have some Republicans like Senator Marshall from Kansas and Senator Hawley from Missouri who are behind this. So there is actually interesting bipartisan agreement. It seems, though, that it's one of those things that sounds better in theory than it would play out in the real world.
I got so many questions about this. First of all, how did it get to be legal to charge somebody 36% interest? I know, Nooney Noneck's been doing that for a long, long time. But when it comes to like credit cards and codified law, et cetera, is this the state or the federal government that regulates this?
Yeah, it's a good question. There is no federal cap on credit card rates for most people. There's a Military Lending Act that has a 36% cap for service members, and that's kind of become the unofficial ceiling for everybody. Even the highest rate cards for people with lower credit scores or store credit cards, those have very high rates. A lot of those top out around 36%. There was a 1978 Supreme Court case that declared that it matters where the bank is based, not the customer, with respect to state interest rate caps and usury laws. So really what that did was it incentivized banks to set up shop in states that either don't have a cap or have a very high cap. So if the bank is based in South Dakota or Delaware or Utah, these are some places that either have high caps or no cap, they can basically export that everywhere. So even if your state has a lower cap, if the bank is based in, say, South Dakota, they can charge essentially whatever they want or up to that state's cap, which is really, really high or non-existent. So that really incentivized a lot of banks to go to places like South Dakota.
I get the midterm campaign aspect of this, the political aspects of this, the financial part of this makes no sense to me, and I'll explain why when we come back. And you can tell me, Ted, if I'm on to anything or not. Ted Rossman, our guest, Bankrate senior industry analyst. The president wants to cap interest rates on credit cards at 10% for, correct me if I'm wrong, Ted, 1 year, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Which just raises a lot of questions on my part. We'll take a break, pick it up. We come back, 620 traffic now, WWL. Thank you, Joseph. We'll talk to you in a little bit. Ted Rossman rejoins us, Bankrate senior industry analyst. So here's the thing about President Trump wanting to reduce the interest rates on credit cards for 1 year only to 10%. I get the political part of that. But really, it goes the philosophy of credit cards. If you're going to use a credit card, a bank card, for a long-term loan, you're making a big mistake because you're going to find a better rate. If you need a loan, go get a loan. Now, I understand some people can't, and as a result, that makes them higher credit risks. So, therefore, the higher credit interest rate. I understand that. I get all of that. But the one-year thing, I don't get that at all, because that's not going to really incentivize people to pay it off because the interest rate is lower for 1 year, is it? I'm missing something here, or am I, Ted?
A one-year pause could give you a big upper hand on knocking down your debt, but you could actually already do that by signing up for a 0% balance transfer card. Mm-hmm. So you take your existing high-cost debt, you move it over to a card that in some cases won't charge interest for 2 years. So that's actually a better deal that's already out there. Now, it's a little different because you have to apply. Not everybody gets approved. But if you have good credit, and most people are in the right ballpark, you could sign up for the U.S. Bank Shield Visa, get 2 years interest-free, or the Citi Simplicity is 21 months. Wells Fargo Reflect is also 21 months. These balance transfer cards are a pretty amazing deal because if you have the average balance, which is around $6,500, you could pay less than $300 a month to be interest-free within 2 years, debt-free within 2 years. That's an amazing tailwind. So that would be my advice. Take matters into your own hands. Make your personal credit card rate zero. I just think the government price control angle could really backfire and lead to a lot less access to credit. But paying down your own debt is a really smart idea.
And I guess the other problem I have is that it seems as though, if anything, this would incentivize people to, well, hey, it's 10%. That's not bad, to run up a big credit card balance, and then it's not 10% anymore. Then they really find themselves in a hole.
That is a worry, yeah. I mean, definitely you want to use credit cards to your advantage. I do worry, though, that a 10% cap would lead to less access to credit. So if banks stop lending, are people going to turn to payday loans, or how are they going to afford daily life? A lot of people put practical things on credit cards, like groceries and car repairs.
It's kind of like being treated, this is going to sound terrible, for an STD. It's a little late after, by that time. It seems like the idea before that is to prevent anything from happening in the first place. I apologize for that analogy, Ted, but it's the best I could come up with traffic coming up and news and everything else. You have a great day, my friend.
All right, thank you. Have a good one.
You bet. Ted Rossman, Bankrate senior industry analyst. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll talk to David Schultz, a professor of political science at Hamline University, about independence. Are you actually independent or not? Because a lot of people say they are, but when it comes time to vote, goes back to the R or the D. And also, I'll ask him about President Trump. Has he changed politicking forever? Right now, 6:30, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Eno's in. 6:46, 14 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. New Gallup poll out about people identifying as independent or Republican or Democrat. David Schultz is here to help us break it down. He's our friend, a professor of political science at Hamline University. How are you, David?
I'm doing well. I hope you're doing well so far this year.
I am, sir. Oh, Happy New Year, I guess I should tell you. It's January 14th. It's going to turn a little bit cold here. High right now, it's 49 degrees. What are we looking at in Minnesota, just out of curiosity?
Okay, right now it is going to be 16 degrees, which is going to be our roughly our high for today, and I think it's going down to just about zero. Now, we had a heat wave the last 2 days. We were up to almost 40 degrees. So whenever we get cold, really cold weather, it eventually reaches you. Now, when I used to live in Texas, we used to call that a blue northerner coming in. I'm not sure what term you use. Our really super cold weather eventually trickles down to you a little bit.
I believe here we say it's going to turn cold, brah.
Okay.
That's
okay.
What we're saying, yeah. So look, let me ask you this. I know you're in Minneapolis, right?
I'm in St. Paul. Across the river. I'm literally a mile from Minneapolis.
And yep. I know that the area where the ICE incident took place is pretty close to proximity-wise to where the George Floyd incident took place. And since we're talking about the weather, let's talk about the political climate, if you will, the civil climate in Minnesota right now. What are you sensing, comparing and contrasting this to the George Floyd incident?
If I were to use the words tense and anxious, I think that's absolutely correct, because what everybody's worried about here is that, you know, after George Floyd was murdered, and we can say he was murdered because he was convicted by a jury. So, you know, we could actually say, you know, and Chauvin murdered him, is that, you know, we know, as you saw in the news, the riots broke out. We had a lot of really bad stuff happen here. And everybody has been kind of like holding their breath, like, please, please, let's just not have a repeat of what happened, you know, against, you know, almost 6 years ago. And so there's for most of the people who are coming out, peaceful protesting, which is, of course, protected under the First Amendment, it's peaceful. But they're like, in any group, there's a bunch of yahoos out there. So like overnight, there were some protests last night and some property got damaged. And so it's, you know, I always call it the 98-2 rule. 98% of us are, you know, are law-abiding, decent, trying to do our job, and 2% are jerks. And that's what we're all worried about, that 2%. And then also with it is that neither the Trump administration nor our local politicians are doing anything to de-escalate. You know, I mean, their rhetoric is just like feeding into things. And what we really need everybody to do is just take a pill, you know, and go to their respective corners. And so that's sort of how most of us, I think, out there are looking at things right now.
You didn't come on to talk about that, but since you're there and you're living it and you're breathing it and you're feeling it, I thought I'd get your take on it. Let's talk about this Gallup poll about people identifying as political independents. What did it show?
Okay, so if we were to go back, it's working from a Gallup poll. Let's say if we went back to roughly the year 2000, okay, about 33%, about one out of three voters would describe themselves as an independent, that is neither Democrat or Republican. But in the latest Gallup poll that just came out, I think on Monday, if I remember correctly here, it's now at a record high of 45% who say they are independents. And so over last 25 years, we've gone from 33% to 45% who identify as independents. And so that's a pretty big shift that's occurred over the last quarter century.
Is there a disconnect when it comes to identification and voting? Because I know for a long time, this was back in the day, not now, for a long time, I thought myself to be an independent. But when it came to voting, man, I actually went to that, defaulted to that letter every time, that R or that D. What about now?
It's still the case here is that the phrase that Gallup uses called leaners, you know, that so I might ask you, Tommy, you know, how are you? I'm an independent, you know, then you might, you know, but then, you know, ask you how you vote, and you say, well, I really vote Republican or I really vote Democrat or something like that, you know, but I consider myself X or something like that. Yeah, what we find is that of that 45% that claim to be independents, the Gallup poll is saying that 20%, of that 45%, it breaks down, 20 lean Democrat, 15 lean Republican, and about 10% are non-leaners. So if we actually filter through absolutely everything. Maybe 10% of the voters are truly leaners at some point, you know, or maybe even less at this point. So, but we do have people who kind of break it down. So what it really looks like, if we add up all the leaners like that, and plus who identify with a party, about 47% of the U.S. population says they're Democrats or leading Democrat. About 42% are saying Republican or leading Republican. And remember, by the way, this is according to a Gallup poll. This is people self-identifying themselves, by the way, too.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back 6:51, 9 till 7. Traffic now, WWL. 6:57 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, about a poll out of Gallup poll that shows more people have identified, or more people are identifying as independent as opposed to a party affiliation. But then again, there's a big disconnect when it comes to actually voting. That's correct, David? They still vote the R or the D?
Correct. We still have very, very small percentage of the population that goes in and votes for, let's say, a third party candidate for president of the United States.
All right, let me talk about politicking, if I may, because they had an incident yesterday at a auto plant in Michigan, and I'm not calling a president out for this because you can only imagine what politicians really say about people. Oh, heck of hell, what your own family says about you when nobody's within earshot, or, you know, what are this, what are that. Somebody yelled at President Trump, so he flipped him off, supposedly. I didn't see the video. This is just from news reports. Has President Trump changed the way we politic in this country, or is that a unique Trumpian thing? Because you can't imagine the president of the United States flipping off somebody, although, you know, a lot of them have already thought it in their minds and not acted upon it. But I just wonder if it's a unique Trump thing, or if that's going to change the way, like, for example, he's kind of off the cuff when it comes to foreign policy, et cetera. Has he changed the way politics operate in America or not?
I think he has. I mean, some things are unique, but he has. But just in terms of the language, I mean, without using the language on the radio, because we can't do it here, mm-hmm. Our local politician and mayor in Minneapolis basically said, you know, to ICE, you know, get the F, and I'm not going to use the word on the air, of course. So, I mean, it used to be you would never hear politicians use that kind of language publicly. So it's he's changed the discourse. He's changed the wording.
And it'd be interesting to see if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because while it does maybe lower the threshold for the way people could conduct themselves in public, maybe it lends an air of candidness or honesty to it.
Possibly it is. I mean, he's talking like what most of our listeners are talking at that point, and maybe that's a way of connecting to the voters better than they used to.
But we really want that to be president. We'll see. Thank you, David. Appreciate the time. We'll be back, WWL.